The views and content expressed on the following program are provided solely for informational and entertainment purposes. They do not constitute legal advice. A podcast is not a substitute for retaining a competent, licensed attorney to advise you on your specific legal situation. How's it going, everybody? Welcome to the show. It is time for Break the Business, where we empower indie creators and have some fun along the way. I'm Ryan Carella, and it is a pleasure to have you here this week. An unbelievable show we have in store for you this week. I am so excited for all of the things we got coming up here, and I know about them, and so I'm excited, and I can't wait to share those great things with you. We're going to have a blast. Our guest coming up in the second segment, we're going to be joined by the Rich Brothers, Brando and Dusty Rich of CashOrTrade.org. They're going to talk about their social ticketing platform that allows people to share tickets for concert events without the intermediaries, without the ridiculous fees, just getting people the concert tickets they need. They also are fighting for federal legislation to get rid of all that ticket intermediary, stupid fee nonsense. So these guys, I don't use the word hero lightly here. Heroes in the live performance space. Excited to bring them on in the second segment. And speaking of heroes whose praises we should be singing, let us break bread with our co-host this week. Always a pleasure to have Elisa Rock Doc on the program. Hey, Elisa.
Hello.
Good to see you and your kazoo. How have you been?
I've been good. It's like late stage capitalist hellscape. Can't complain. Just chilling.
We're all just fiddling while Rome. We're
slow
all just
dancing in a burning room, baby.
We're all just playing we're the string quartet on the Titanic, just playing away, but having a good time while things sink.
Time.
And just seeing you and hearing the golden voice and knowing the stories that we have to talk about this week makes me so very, very happy, Elisa Rock Doc. I want to start things off with something kind of frivolous. I want to bring you in, Elisa, on a conversation that Bill Bolden and I, Bill was our guest co-host last week. Bill Bolden and I were having last week about the Madam Web trailer.
Oh, heavens.
Now, I know you're saying to yourself, Ryan, you're a little late on this particular pop culture meme. Like, you're still doing Madam Web jokes. And in response, I would say to that, I did have some surgery. I was out of commission for like a week. And so I'm a little behind on pop culture. Oh, I'm okay. Don't worry. I got to wear glasses for a little while because my eyes are no good, but I'm good. But the point is, like, I'm about 2 or 3 weeks behind in my pop culture.
Okay, so
and so I'm...
We just haven't gotten to Wonka yet.
That's right. I'm still on Madam Web. In particular, I am on and continue to be obsessed with the completely unhinged line from the Madam Web trailer.
Oh, you're going to make me read it.
Ezekiel, you already know the line, right? Ezekiel Sims, he was in the Amazon with my mom while she was researching spiders right before she died.
Right before she died.
All in one sentence, like just trying to cram as much exposition as possible into one sentence in a line of dialogue that like no human being would ever utter in the real world.
Which is impressive because like usually I would like throw in all of the parentheses and you know there's going to be an M dash if I'm writing that. You know what I mean? But it's just one solid sentence.
Yeah, I mean, it is a sentence with a great deal of commas. It's 17 words long, but it meets the legal definition of a sentence. It sounds a little bit like this. We'll let Miss Dakota Johnson recite this brilliant piece of screenwriting from the Madam Web movie.
And before.
So who is he?
Ezekiel Sims.
Oh, uh-oh.
He was in the Amazon with my mom when she was researching spiders right before she died.
Wait, I recognize...
Let me do it again because we got a little interrupted there.
There's a lot.
Ezekiel Sims. He was in the Amazon with my mom when she was researching spiders right before she died.
Ezekiel Sims, He was in the Amazon with my mom. While she was researching spiders. Right before she died. Why they couldn't break those up into multiple sentences, I'll never know. And one of the things that we landed on when we were making fun of this line last week, Elisa, is I had introduced the proposition that there is no actor, living or dead, that can possibly recite that line of dialogue and make it sound good. Like Dakota Johnson, like this isn't on Dakota Johnson, right? She's a perfectly fine actress, and this was just an impossible task.
It's hard. Now this is coming from someone who literally had an audition last week that consisted of, I do believe, multiple reads of just one letter in different inflections.
Really? What letter was it?
The only letter in that script was the letter M. They needed me to deliver a series of M's in various tones and pitches and sentiments. One letter. One letter. And that is part of my job, is to deliver different reads of different things in an audition. I have a hard time.
Well, and right, but even somebody of your skill level as an actress, no matter how many different inflections, no matter how many different ways you say it, there's no way you can make the line, Ezekiel Sims, he was in the Amazon with my mom while she was researching spiders right before she died, sound good. Like it's a ridiculous line to even say fast. However, we left the conversation, Bill and I, with the following conclusion. The only actor, living or dead, that we think could read that line and make it work, unfortunately, is an actor that is no longer with us. There's no living actor that can do this. But we concluded that the only actor, living or dead, that could read that line well, Gilbert Gottfried.
Oh, wow.
And unfortunately, Gilbert is not with us to prove my thesis. Right, we could not call upon Gilbert Gottfried to read this line of dialogue for us. However, what we do have is Fiverr.com.
Oh no!
A marvelous website filled with terrific freelancers that you can pay $5 plus a additional vig for Fiverr, so about $7.55
rates
to get people to get a Gilbert Gottfried impersonator to read anything you want, including this completely unhinged dialogue from Madam Web. So to test my theory, Lauren, do you have our Gilbert Gottfried impersonator reading this line from Madam Web?
Ezekiel Sims, he was in the Amazon with my mom when she was researching spiders right before she died.
I mean, Gilbert nails it.
Release the Gilbert Gottfried cut.
Give it to us again, producer Lauren. Oh, God.
Ezekiel Sims, he was in the Amazon with my mom when she was researching spiders right before she died.
The only thing, I wouldn't want to raise you with Sam Kinison. But I feel like that might be a very dated reference.
That, I mean, yeah. First of all, super topical. As if my Madam Web references weren't dated already. You come in with a Sam Kinison.
I'm of a different time. But that, I have not seen Madam Web. I have seen Dakota Johnson give interviews about like how difficult a movie like this is and how it is. She's like, I don't think I'm ever going to do something like this again. You know, talking about things that very clearly were maybe written in a boardroom by committee, say.
Or by ChatGPT. Perhaps.
Who could say? So, like, I feel like she has a pretty level head about it. I have heard things like it's sublime in a, like, The Room type way, this movie, Madam Web.
The Room?
Yeah.
That is a strong comp right there.
People have, like, I fully predict that it is entirely possible that we may see shadow casts and screenings, midnight showings of Madam Web throwing heaven knows what at the screen.
And then we have to come up with like a script of things we have to yell at the screen. Yeah. And we have to dress in costume.
Well, everybody's going to be saying that one line all together in a chorus. It's going to be beautiful, actually. I'm kind of looking forward to that.
I mean, if you're telling me that this is like in the, because I haven't seen this movie, nor do I plan to, but if you're telling me it's like in the same pantheon as The Room of like So Bad It's Good, we have to watch it at midnight showings in the East Village, that I could get excited about. But now you got me thinking, damn it, this is going to cost me another $5. I got to find a Sam Kinison impersonator on Fiverr, and we got to hear that next week.
If you can find a Sam Kinison impersonator on Fiverr,
I'm convinced. Lauren, Lauren, if you could, producer Lauren, just let us know by the end of the show if there is a Sam Kinison impersonator on Fiverr. There has to be. I have yet to find a single thing. I've never looked for something on Fiverr, no matter how absurd, that I was not able to find. Speaking of wonderful things on Fiverr, our thanks to at Funny Guy Timmy on Fiverr.com for supplying us with that marvelous, marvelous Gilbert Gottfried reading.
That was great. And actually, that was one of the only times where I felt like the line might have actually like worked.
I mean, are we wrong?
I'm taking an acting class. I'm doing script analysis. I am dissecting the hows, the whys, the who am I and who are these people and who am I talking to and how do I feel about these people in this scene? And, you know, for less than a Hamilton, you got it right on the money.
I like to think I was like, obviously I'm not the actor here, but I feel like I was the executive producer of this amazing project. Like I conceived of this. I brought the actor together. Mm-hmm. I obviously didn't write the script. And I put this beautiful thing into the world. And you want to know why it works? Because like in terms of Gilbert Gottfried nailing this line better than even a great actress like Dakota Johnson, is you have to accept that this line is unreadable. And so no amount of acting polish that you put on it. Oh, maybe if I pause after this line or I emphasize that line. No. You have to blow through this line of dialogue like you're running through a stop sign at maximum volume and just get through it as fast as you can. Yeah. And that's the only way. Lauren, one more time. Can you give us Gilbert Gottfried?
Ezekiel Sims, he was in the Amazon with my mom when she was researching spiders right before she died.
It's the way he says died. Right before she died.
Shakespeare once said, all's well that ends well. And this is one such example.
Oh, my God. Oh, okay. Well, all right. Let us compose ourselves. That was worth every one of those fivers that we put into that.
Absolutely. Oh,
what a treat. We're going to have a Funny Guy Timmy read some more things as Gilbert Gottfried for us. That was an absolute delight. Now, I will confess that the next story I have for you, Elisa, is not quite it's not going to make you laugh the same way that the Gilbert Gottfried thing did. But it is nonetheless very, very important. It's some really interesting legal news that might even have something to bear on you, because as an indie creator, between you and Evan, you might have an LLC or an S Corp or something. And so we've talked about the Corporate Transparency Act on previous episodes of this show. I don't think you were ever a co-host where we brought up this particular law, but all the more reason to bring you into it now because we have an update on it. So to quickly get you and the new viewers and listeners up to speed, we got this thing called the Corporate Transparency Act. It went into effect January of this year. It's a federal law. And what it basically says is that if you own any kind of business that's like an LLC or a corporation or something that you had to form that is not either publicly traded or a nonprofit or like a really, really, really big business. So like 95% of the businesses out there, including, and this would include most businesses that indie creators create. You know, if you create an LLC for your music projects, or you have like a music consulting company, or you have a corporation because you created like a record label for yourself, a lot of artists this applies to. Anyway, what the law says is if you have one of these kinds of businesses, like the 95% of businesses that are out there, the law requires that you report who your owners are. The beneficial ownership information, who the owners of your business are, you have to report it to a unit of the federal government known as the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network, or FinCEN. And so this is something that basically most people are on the clock about right now. So if you created a business before January 1st, 2024, you had like an LLC that you're using with your entertainment projects, you have to report your ownership information to FinCEN by the end of this year. If you create a business this year after January 1st, you have 90 days to do this filing requirement. Now, if you are a loyal listener to this program, you might have heard some of this already. None of this is new. Here's what's new, and here's what has been just stressing me out all week as I've been fielding tons of calls from artist clients about this, is that on Friday, the Friday after we recorded Break the Business last week, a federal judge in Alabama just held that this law, the Corporate Transparency Act, is unconstitutional. Basically, the judge said that Congress does not have the power to make this law. Now, we're not going to go into the legal minutiae of why why the judge reached this conclusion. I'm not completely sure why the judge reached this conclusion. And frankly, it's going to put us all to sleep. What matters is my clients found out about this, and I got tons of emails from them being like, what happened, dude? You told us we have to do this filing. And now some guy in Alabama says I don't have to do the filing anymore because the law's not constitutional. What do I do?
Yeah.
And that's a really good question, because you have a judge that's saying this law is not constitutional. But FinCEN, if you go on the FinCEN website of the federal government right now, they're still saying you got to file. And if you created one of those filings after January 1st, you still have that 90-day clock, which means starting in April, they're going to expect to see your filing if you created something back in January. So, like, it's here, and you're getting two different messages from two different branches of government. Not fun. And so a lot of people have been asking me, what do we do? Who do we listen to? And that's kind of where we are right now. And I mean, did any of that make sense so far? Like, am I doing a terrible job explaining this? Because it's so boring, but it's so important.
That was good. That was a really, really good idea. Just to clarify, does that count for DBAs?
It does not. Well, it counts for DBAs. That's a fabulous question, by the way. So a lot of people have DBAs, which are just like, this is a different name for my business. If your DBA is a DBA for you personally, like if you have a name for your, if you have a personal doing business as, or what we call in Florida, a fictitious name that corresponds to just you personally, then this filing law doesn't apply to you. However, if your DBA... Yeah, sounds like you guys have a DBA, or that kind of DBA, because you're like, oh, good, we don't have to file.
Punching the air like, yay, Rob.
Yeah, one less thing. Oh, come on. As if, like, if you had to do this filing, you don't think I would just do this for you? Like, it's not a long filing. I got your back. But if your DBA is a DBA for an LLC or corporation, as a lot of people have DBAs for, because you might have a corporation that has a certain name, but that you do business under an assumed name. If that's your scenario, then that LLC or corporation still has to do this filing with the federal government.
Okay, good to know.
Now, so here's the best guidance that I have been given about this is basically Financial Crimes Enforcement Network, or FinCEN, has taken the position that this whole thing about the law being unconstitutional only applies to the people who sued in the Alabama case. So they're taking the position that those people don't have to file for now while the case works through appeal. But everybody else, we're still expecting your filing. So get that in and over here. And so do not necessarily. So, you know, the point is, if you read about this case and you're like texting me or texting your lawyer saying, hey, that filing you said I have to do, do I still have to do it? assume that you still have to do it. And, you know, because this is going to work through appeals, and maybe eventually the Supreme Court or somebody will say, okay, you really don't have to do this. But in the meantime, assume that the law is still in place and do the filing.
And the shot clock is still running.
And the, right. You know, because, you know, like, you don't want to be wrong about this, right? Like, there's no harm in filing. It's not a difficult requirement. It doesn't take a long time. And if it turns out that this law winds up being constitutional again, which I think it will be, if I had to make a prediction, if that's worth anything, I don't think the Alabama judge's ruling is particularly strong. You're going to have already complied with the requirement and you won't miss the deadline.
Okay.
Now, as I was explaining all of this and as I was figuring out how to talk about this story this week, Elisa, I had fully conceded that this is a boring as hell topic. Corporate transparency, beneficial owner information, federal corporate law is not a exciting topic for a podcast that's all about empowering indie creators. And so to kind of make this topic a little more engaging, a little bit more fun, to make sure it reaches our audience, I wanted to enlist the help of two of my favorite creative professionals in the industry. One being Elisa Rockdock, to benefit from her artistic talents. And the other creative professional, probably of equal skill and likability, is ChatGPT, or the AI overlord. So to help us explain the Corporate Transparency Act, let us bring out our AI overlord tip of the week. I miss that song. We have not. It's like the AI overlord has been sitting in mothballs, getting dusty. I hope it doesn't have feelings, because if it has feelings, it's feeling very unloved and ignored right now.
No. The AI overlord was taking a little break in Glasgow, very briefly. Was working on a project. But now they're back. They're back, better than ever.
They are back. And so what I have asked ChatGPT to do with the help of Elisa Rockdock, a really terrific like man and machine combination here, is we asked ChatGPT to take this story about the Corporate Transparency Act and this latest court holding and tell it through the lens of a fun, exciting young adult novel. And then we would have our acclaimed audiobook narrator who has, you know, done this professionally and has narrated some terrific audiobooks in the young adult space, right?
Yes, I have.
Elisa Rockdock, to read the terrific young adult novel that ChatGPT wrote. Were able to get you the text there?
Yes, I do have the copy in front of me, Ryan. Yes, I do.
Very good.
I have the manuscript.
So, this is like this is almost not fair that we are taking somebody of your resume and your talent and having you do such silly crap with it like this. But I'm excited to hear the output here. So, Elisa, if you would, could you read this young adult novel for us about the Corporate Transparency Act?
Here we go. In the heart of the bustling metropolis of New Edge City, a world where technology intertwines with the pulse of everyday life, a group of young revolutionaries finds themselves entangled in a, not madam, web of corporate intrigue and governmental oversight more complex than any algorithm. Jax, a brilliant coder with a penchant for hacking the unhackable, stumbles upon a digital breadcrumb that leads him and his friends into the shadows of a new federal law, the Corporate Transparency Act. This law, which came into effect on January 1st, 2024, demands that all entities, from towering corporations to humble startups, to even LLCs created by indie artists, must reveal their beneficial owners to FinCEN, a watchdog veiled in secrecy and power. Established companies have until the end of 2024 to report, while new entities formed in this year face a narrower window, needing to comply within 90 days of their creation. As Jax delves deeper, he discovers that a federal judge in Alabama has thrown a spanner in the works by declaring the act unconstitutional, a ruling that sends shockwaves through the corridors of power and shakes the foundations of compliance and regulation. Despite this, FinCEN, the enigmatic agency at the heart of this storm, insists that the judgment is a mere whisper in the wind, asserting its authority and demanding that all but the plaintiffs in the lawsuit adhere to the original reporting timelines. With the clock ticking towards these deadlines, Jax and his comrades, Zoe, a legal prodigy with a fierce spirit, and Eli, a journalist with a nose for the truth, embark on a quest to expose the implications of this ruling. They navigate through a labyrinth of legal battles, corporate espionage, and government secrets, armed with nothing but their wits, courage, and an unyielding quest for justice. As they weave through the neon-lit streets and shadowy alleys of New Edge City, Jax, Zoe, and Eli must decipher the true meaning of ownership and identity in a digital age, battling forces that seek to keep the truth shrouded in darkness. Through their journey, they inspire a generation to stand up for transparency and integrity, igniting a spark that could change the course of history.
Woo!
Thank you.
Just magnificent. The words jumped off the page. Sydney Sweeney is already calling her agent, being like, if you don't get me Zoe, if I'm not playing Zoe this spring during the filming session of this movie, I'm firing you.
Absolutely.
Oh my God, what a just a fantastic read. You have demystified some very boring, complicated commercial law. Thank you, Elisa Rock Doc. Oh, and if you're thinking to yourself, viewers and listeners, man, this Elisa really seems to have talent for days and can just make anything sound terrific. I am inclined to agree, as is the industry on a monthly basis, because every month that we have Elisa here, she's got even more cool career updates for us. So Elisa, before we go to break here, can you tell us a little bit about what's going on with you this week with your career update?
I am very afraid of thunder, and there's lightning happening directly outside my window, so I'm just trying to keep it together at the moment. But other than trying to keep it together, I am very excited because, speaking of audiobooks, I get my first manuscript of the year next week to start recording. I don't know if I'm allowed to say the name of the book yet, but, you know, maybe that'll be next month. So stay tuned for that. So I've gotten book actually for two audiobooks since the last time we hung out. First one comes next week. And I got a callback, actually two separate callbacks, one for each language, for a VO audition that is literally happening tomorrow morning. I got the news today that I got a callback for this thing that I recorded like 2 weeks ago. So if there are any actors listening and you feel like, oh my gosh, I'm in some sort of a slump, do not worry. Sometimes it does take a long time for people to even get back to you, and you never know, your life can change in less than 24 hours. You could go from drought to callbacks just like that. So keep your chin up.
And just spectacular timing, because you got this booking right before you had to do your career update. It would have been a much shorter update if not for that.
It's like they knew. And thank you.
That's fantastic. In addition to all of those things, Elisa, we also learned about another project that you were doing. We found out about last week when we had Bill on the show.
Yes.
Because you and Evan created a track for the We're Doomed, We're Dancing album project that Bill Bolden, aka Down Upright, is doing. And this thing is magnificent. It's a 60 track, 60 seconds per track album, a musical journey through the end of the world. And not going to lie, the track that you and Evan did is straight fire.
I do kind of love that song. I'm not going to lie. It's one of my favorite things I've ever done as a musician has been that track.
And I can't believe Evan's solo in this. Like Evan, this is a silly little album project. He's one track of 60 songs, and he decided, oh, this is like, I'm going to play the greatest solo that's ever been played. You know, might F around and, you know, create the greatest solo ever. Before we go to break, producer Lauren, can you play, because it's only 60 seconds, can you play their track so people can hear Elisa's great vocals and Evan's spectacular solo?
Sims? He was in the Amazon with my mom when she was researching spiders right before she died.
I'm sorry, I had to. I'm sorry. That was tremendous. Dale Neruda writes in, where do I get the album? Go to search Down Upright on Google. The album's coming out in April. If you backed the Kickstarter project, you already got a copy of it, but it's coming out to everybody in April, and it's a the whole album is amazing. Bill really did a great job with it with the help of fantastic collaborators like Evan and Elisa. Oh, okay. Let us go to break. We got Brando and Dusty Rich of Cash or Trade coming up next. It's going to be a blast. Don't go anywhere. Keep checking out Break the Business.
Break the Business is presented in cooperation with Ryan A. Carella, PA. Ryan A. Carella, PA is a law firm providing transactional entertainment legal services, including contracts, business formation, commercial law, copyright, trademark, and more. Ryan A. Carella, PA, Miami, Florida. rkpalaw.com.
Streaming services for Break the Business provided by LEK Entertainment. LEK Entertainment is a full-service entertainment company offering everything from consultations to full-scale events and productions, including audio and video productions, voiceovers, staged theatrical productions, script and music development, and streaming services. For more information, visit lekentertainment.com. LEK Entertainment wants to help you bring your story to life.
Thanks for supporting Break the Business. If you have a question or topic that you want us to discuss, email us at breakthebusiness@gmail.com. You can follow the host, that's me, on Twitter at Ryan KAIR, and you can follow the show at the BTB Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to the show on Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook, and on all major podcast platforms. And now, let's get back to the show. I regret to report that I don't see a Sam Kinison impersonator advertising their services on Fiverr.com. I am heartbroken. We're going to need to find a different celebrity living or dead. Wait, producer Lauren, do you have a update
you
here?
You can find one on Gig Salad.
Oh, thank you, Gig Salad. All right. Next week, Sam Kinison impersonator is going to read the line from Madam Web. I don't care how much it's going to cost.
His name is Bad Sam.
Of course it is. All right. We're going to make this happen. Look, there are plenty of places you can go to get your advice on how to move your career forward as an indie creator, but how many of them find dead comedians to read lines from terrible superhero movies?
Thank
all right.
You.
We got that market on lock. We have the monopoly on that for sure. We have cornered the market. Ryan Carella here. What's that?
Niche handled.
Ryan Carella here with Elisa Rockdock, just having a grand old time and just really enjoying ourselves. For those who are asking about the volume.com thing and when we're going to be joining volume.com, yep, that is happening. We had a meeting with the volume.com people earlier today, producer Lauren and I. It was awesome. We had a nice exchange of ideas. We're going to do some cool things with the pictures and IP and assets. It's going to be fun. April is when we are going to be on the platform next month.
Very cool.
We would have a specific day for you, but we don't know what it is yet. But we know it's April. So when we can narrow it down to one of the 30 days in April, I think I did that right. 30 days.
Yeah. It has September, April, June. Yeah.
Yeah. When we figure out which of those 30 days it is, it's probably going to be one of the four Thursdays in April. We'll let you know. In the meantime, let us commence what I am sure is going to be a fantastic conversation with our guests this week. They are the co-founders of Cash or Trade, a social ticketing platform where music fans can buy, sell, and trade tickets at face value without the typical shenanigans associated with secondary ticket sales. Our guests are also on the steering committee for Fix the Ticks, a coalition of independent venue supporters fighting for proposed federal legislation to ensure fair and transparent ticket sales. You can find out more about our guest's work by visiting cashortrade.org. We are happy to welcome Brando and Dusty Rich on to Break the Business. Hello to you both. Great to have you here.
Great to be here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, loud and clear, Dusty.
Excellent. I think. Yeah, well, Ryan, thanks for having us. Brando.
Thanks for having us. Great to be here.
Oh, nice. There's Brando and Dusty. We're going to make this happen. I love Brando's Bob Barker Price is Right microphone there. That thing is fantastic. I love it. I want to get one.
You said an external
like
mic, so.
And damn it, not only, and you had to go ahead and bring the coolest one I've ever seen. I mean, Brando delivered. All right. Let me start with you, Dusty, on sort of a question about the general state of things in concert ticketing. I would use the word hellscape to describe the state of concert ticketing, particularly with all these secondary platforms out there. Can you summarize the hellscape that music fans are going through right now when it comes to buying concert tickets, whether it's on a primary or a secondary ticketing site, the surcharges, the lack of transparency, fee after fee after fee, all of this money getting charged to fans, and so little of this money actually ending up in an artist's pockets. How did we get here?
Well, certainly, let me... I guess I could start right from the beginning. We were all there, right? We were in line to get tickets to any popular event. You would end up at a box office or a Filene's, I think, back in the day, or a record store. You know,
come
to
on.
Buy tickets to your favorite concert. And this was how it went for years. And you'd even see it on the news, even if you weren't a concert goer. They'd be interviewing people outside the Super Bowl, and they'd have their tent set up and cooking hot dogs, and hey, how's it been going? Oh, we've been here all night in the rain, you know, waiting for tickets. And that's what it looked like for all of us pre-internet, right? And there'd be a few people in line who would slip through and purchase some tickets who weren't ever intending to go to the concert or the sporting event, and you would see them at the front gate right around tickets you know, enter time. Hey, I've got your extra tickets here, and they would be scalped for high prices. But that was about the scale of what we were experiencing as concert goers and sports fans. So, and for those of you who haven't heard of us, cashortrade.org, Brando and I came up with this name because when people were outside of the concerts, they'd have one finger in the air and they would be walking around and phrasing this term. They said, cash or trade for your extra, cash or trade. And this is the coined term. For somebody who was looking for an extra ticket who didn't have one, who showed up. So all of a sudden, we were all there. Everything, the digital revolution happened. Google didn't even happen until 1998, right? And then 2000s came along. Facebook wasn't until 2006. And then there was iPhones and not just, I remember buying, you know, the only thing online was books and flowers with Amazon in the early days, but then everything went online and so did ticketing. Now, anytime there was a concert or a show, all of the tickets were then distributed through the online platform. Now it opened it up to everybody, the globe, right? And whenever you do that, in comes the people who are there to exploit it. So they started using bot software to thwart around the captures and purchase the tickets the second they go on sale. So the normal consumer is there with their credit card and their mouse, and they click, and they're sold out. And what happened? And they don't know what happened. And all of a sudden, they were redirected to the secondary market, which had come in this wave, and all of these resale sites popped up where now these brokers could liquidate their tickets. Now, what these tickets were listed at wasn't the actual price that they were selling at. So this artificial inflation was going on. They figured, hey, if I collect my revenue from my 1% and purchase the tickets, you know what? That's fine with me. And coming game day, the demand softens. I've got a lot of extra tickets. They'll try to unload them if they can. If they can't, who cares? Because they already profited from their 1%. They put their money in their pocket. Now there's all of these extra tickets, and a lot of them don't even go sold. So you go into the show and there's empty seats, but it's completely sold out. So this has become a major issue for the artists who are losing out from their number one fans, who are the best marketers of the time. You've got the losses of the concessions, less people in the venue. So the venues are losing, the artists are losing, the real fans are losing, and the only ones who are really gaining are the brokers and the resale websites that that garner and provide this channel.
So what is
Brando? We're like, yeah.
Yeah. What does Cash or Trade do to try to fix this?
Yeah.
So Cash Trade said, well, what is the problem? Well, there's no transparency, and there's no accountability, and there's no place where you could transact with your friends or other fans that aren't in it for this business game. They're in it for, oh, I can't go. No, there's a wedding or something, and I have my extra tickets. And I've been, this isn't 1999 anymore, and tickets aren't $23. I've got $600 wrapped up in tickets because I bought four tickets, one for me, my wife or partner, and two from my two friends who wanted to join me. This is a social experience. So you end up with a handful of tickets that are really expensive. People are like, I just need to get my money back. So we said, hey, let's stand up a platform that has the qualities of eBay, where you could have reviews, you could have the friending from like aspects like Facebook had, you could see a chronological listing like Craigslist had. So, and we were like, let's put them all together, wrap it up with a social mission of being for face value and face value only. This is the place for the fans. Come one, come all, and take part in this community. And what started off to be 1,000 members, 2,000, 5,000 turned into almost a half a million website and app users. And then we started building groups on Facebook and the social networks that are also trading tickets. And there's another 500,000 in those. So this thing has ballooned.
A simple
concept.
And
we're really excited about it.
Yeah, it's exciting and a powerful concept. It, you know, it's a simple idea of I got extra tickets, but I don't want to gouge. I don't want to put in a bunch of stupid fees. I want it to be transparent. Here's a place where you can get that ticket for face value so that I can get my money back so that a fan, an actual real human fan, can get that seat and get into the concert. It's a simple, delightful concept that yet seems to escape the grasp of big business as well as the halls of Congress right now. And that brings us to the work that you two are doing with Fix the Ticks. I'll bring in Brando on this one. Brando, tell us about the work that you're doing with that organization, Fix the Ticks, and with NEVA, the National Independent Venues Association. You guys are trying to get legislation done in Congress to try to fix some of these problems in concert ticketing, fixing the hidden fees, the lack of transparency, and all the other problems that Dusty was talking about there. Can you tell us about how all that's going?
Yeah, for sure. Currently, there's a number of acts in committee and being introduced in many states. But then at the federal level, there's the Tickets Act in the House and the Fans First Act in the Senate. And both are gaining much steam, I should say. The focus is that you know, fans have been thwarted all these years, and now they're starting to create some language to help restrict the influence that a secondary market can have on their events. And you can imagine when you're putting on an event and you see them being scalped over here and you see, you know, scammers scamming with them over there, that it has an impact on the event, not just the event holder, but the fans as well. So the legislation is stepping in to reduce like deceptive marketing practices, to help eliminate speculative tickets, as Dusty mentioned, being sold, tickets being sold that they didn't even purchase yet.
Yeah.
That they don't even actually own them yet. So these get listed on the secondary market for enormous prices to kind of like inflate the market. And it really just throws everything out of whack. So, these acts are in place to help, you know, provide more power back to the event holders and reduce the effect that a secondary market might have. And Cash or Trade has been added to the steering committee for this legislation because of our unique position to be running a secondary marketplace website, but for face value only. Mm. And because it's face value only, we are starting to make partnerships directly with the event and their primary ticket companies. So we've partnered with a number of festivals, a number of artists, and now the ticket companies as well, to sort of sit in the middle, helping the event and the venue have control over their secondary space to help keep those tickets at face value and give a safe place for people to transact without the scamming that goes on social media.
I love the idea of partnering with the artists and the venues to try to create this reality. And I know Elise has got a ton of questions for you. I want to ask you one more question, Brando, about the politics of this legislation before we bring Elise in. Because, you know, as somebody, like, you know, she is a working musician who does, you know, perform live and probably has a lot of thoughts on this. But here's my feeling about the politics of this. And it's something that bothers me is I feel like there's been a great deal of grandstanding on this issue in that, you know, these politicians, they love to bring in all these famous artists to come testify before Congress. And the politicians love to get the camera time talking about how they're fighting for artists. And they all did their cute little things where they would like mix Taylor Swift lyrics in with their congressional testimony. Oh, look how, you know, hip, you know, some random 80-year-old senator is because they know a Taylor Swift line. And they do all the things to get the clicks and to get the attention. And then when it comes time to actually passing a law, we don't see it yet. Like, we're getting close. You know, the House passes one thing, the Senate passes one thing. But I would love to see the politics get to a place where we're not just talking, but there's actual action happening there. Are you optimistic that maybe in this Congress or in the next Congress, we're going to get some talk that actually turns to action?
I am optimistic. I mean, I think we've seen some of the largest movement in this space in many years. There's a lot of bipartisan support right now. And there's a lot of technology out there, too. The rise of, you know, different types of face value exchange options and resale opportunities. But I think things are on the way and I'm excited for what's ahead. Yes.
Yeah.
Go ahead. I was just going to say that, on Tuesday, February 20th, Maryland lawmakers, were presented, a bill. It's in the Senate, it's 539, in the House it was 701. And that bill was kind of the first of its kind that really was mirrored after the cash or trade model, which set a price ceiling for the resale of tickets to be only at face value in the state of Maryland, and that to be a law, and also have some stipulations for transparency on who are the vendors of these tickets. And once people could, you know, see if this was like a broker or they would, you know, could make a better decisions. And then it also had, like Brando said, about some speculatory practices that people would use namesake, you know, buy domain names, for instance, with the artist and the venue's name and spoof them into the Google searches and, you know, and deceive fans and thinking that they're buying them from the actual. So there were a few of these statements added into the language, and we're going to see where it's headed. We supported the bill, and if one state can pass this, this can maybe start to be a framework where others could, you know, step in and model their bills after it.
Yeah, I was going to jump in and sort of like say that oftentimes I hear of, you know, Beyonce and Taylor Swift as sort of like the poster children of this, but noticing the Grateful Dead merch and me being around sort of jam bands and being sort of closely involved with somebody in a jam band, that community, I imagine, definitely can benefit from cashortrade.org, because a lot of bands, especially in the jam community, those are some of the most loyal fans. And oftentimes these folks aren't playing the same set every single show. In fact, a lot of folks pride themselves on not playing the same show twice. So I got to imagine that in terms of genre, I wonder if sort of like that kind of close-knit community folks that, you know, even with tapers, like it's still not the same thing as going and experiencing, you know, like a Dead & Co or, you know, or a fish, I mean, especially fish, you know? So can you speak to sure. a little bit about that? I just noticed.
Sure. Well, I mean, I'm a big fan of Taylor as well. Cause I have three girls and we sing her around the house for sure. But you're right for those, shows that have the variability of not the same set list. So now you have one customer, a fan, who would want to go see multiple shows in a row. And those are the people that are, would be considered a super fan mm-hmm. and artists. And as we have seen the shift of how the economy of music has worked over the years, it's no longer in albums where they used to generate revenue through CDs and stuff like that. Now it's about the live performance, right? So now to try to protect this live performance experience, this is the situation that we're in where the biggest question that we may have outside of the faithful fan genre is, why would I want to sell a ticket at face value if I can make all this money? Well, it's a misconception where it's not as it seems. because that's not exactly what people are actually getting for the ticket. And as you see, as the show gets closer, tickets really come to face value anyways. So, and like I was saying earlier, the tickets aren't at low prices anymore. So now you're sitting on a credit card of like $600. And the first thing that comes to your mind, as we all do, we don't dump the tickets right away. We're going to see if we can go. And we're really, we know that engagement's coming up and all of a sudden it comes, we have to sell them. And the first thing that comes to your mind is, hey, am I going to try to make some extra money so I can use it on a vacation? No. Your first thought to your mind is like, I want my money back.
Mm. Yeah. After the on sale, demand softens. And as it gets closer to the event, it softens even more. And then tickets start popping up on social media sites and you start seeing more and more extras, even though the show is sold out. So when you're like 1 week away from the event, 80% of the tickets wind up on the secondary market sell within 1 to 2 weeks of the event. So it's at that point where the average fan who has, like Dusty said, $600 in tickets, they could go play businessman on a secondary market site and compete with sophisticated brokers and software and try to price match and adjust. But they also know that they're going to get charged 15% to sell their tickets. And the buyer is going to be charged upwards of 35% to buy those tickets. It starts to become a little bit more difficult to just like make your money back in a lot of cases than what everyone thought it would be. Cash or Trade is a place where people can come, post their tickets for face value, make sure that they communicate with real fans who have a face and a profile with reviews, where you can actually talk to them if you want and find out if a guy happens to be bringing his daughter to her first show, and you can sell your tickets to them for face value at no profit.
And you and to your point, Brando, most of these people wind up making more money when all is said and done with that model anyway, because you're not giving some of that money to a middle person. And again, like, doesn't it just feel better when you know that the ticket that you've sold is actually going to a fellow human who loves that artist just as much as you do, especially if you're selling like four tickets and they're all together? Now you know the person sitting next to you at the concert is going to be like a cool dude that you want to hang with anyway.
Especially and, you know, the sporting events.
Yeah.
You don't sell to somebody from the wrong team.
Oh, booed. Nobody wants that. Can I ask you about how this platform came together? I read that you guys basically built this thing at Starbucks locations while you were following fish on tour. Do I have this right?
Back in 2009, we're just about talking like 15 years ago now. We kind of packed up our Easy Up tent and we hit every show on tour. We set up a tent. We set up a bulletin board with post-it notes so people could write the tickets they have or the tickets they want.
No way!
Wow. That was our low-tech version.
An analog cashertrade.com. I love this.
Absolutely.
And people loved it. Starbucks people loved it. They would come up and they would meet. They would find us on lot over the shows. Oh, I'll meet you at the Cash or Trade tent. I have an extra, right? You know, and they would go up and they Say, I have a Thursday night for your Friday night. So we also offer the trade option, which no other resale platform offers, the ability to trade tickets. And it kind of grew from there in that like organic way. But exactly like you said, me and Brando, we pull in, we find a Wi-Fi connection with a laptop. We'd start coding the website. We'd stand up the simple bulletin board. And then we would set up the tent on lot and we'd say, hey, check this site out. Go there. If you can't put it up on the board, you could just post it there. And then they would come to the next show. And I'd be like, hey, can you guys add this feature? And we'd be like, okay, great. And the next night, me and Brando would pull in. So, you know, late at night, and we're like, oh, we're coding that feature in. And we're like, all right, bam, it's live. Let's go to the next show. We'll tell them about it. And
what was a hobby for over a decade, you know, became a career.
You also have to be the only people in the history of the universe who would be able to get through an entire Phish concert, yet somehow have the energy to do coding afterwards.
All the time.
Because most people who get through Phish concerts just want to like eat a bag of Cheetos after it. So.
It never stops. Well, the face value
mission.
Not
every night with coding.
The face value movement.
No, we had a good time with it. And like Brando said, it was a hobby for many years. And until right before COVID, Brando really, you know, put his foot on the gas and said, all right, this thing has outgrown the hobby that we created. You know, it was fun for a long time, but now this community is really asking and demanding for this service to be something. And that's when Brando said, all right, let's go start for looking for some seed capital. Let's turn this thing into a real functional tool that can scale. And then obviously COVID hit, which slowed the music way down, put us into like kind of a development phase. And then all of a sudden, once COVID lifted, boom, the live music came back. Cash or Trade was back in a new version. And now we're at the point where we've redeveloped the platform. We want to launch the new app very soon, so stay tuned. But that should be able for us to now confidently scale it and feel good about it versus being like, hey, this is an idea and just send the world at it. You know, we were like, let's scale it from two or the three servers to like 20 servers with fraud protections and IP, filtering and stuff like that to try to set us up on the right foot. So then we can offer this to artists in all genres of music and eventually into other categories.
Is pretty dang inspiring. I mean, Brando spoke of this face value movement that you all are crusading for, and you're doing it both in the halls of Congress as well as in your own business. You're living it day to day at Cash or Trade. You can find out more about our guest's work by visiting cashortrade.org. Our guests have been Dusty Rich and Brando from Cash or Trade. Gentlemen, before we let you go, and we got about a minute or so before we lose radio, so I'll need your answers on this quick. We'll start with Dusty. Final question. Do you have any last tips for the indie creators out there to help them move their careers forward?
I would say stand up your Facebook group and start the chatter there. And other like bulletin boards. Those are still places where people who are fanatics, they want to talk about the experience and they need a place to do it.
Brando, same question. Any last tips for the indie creators out there?
Well, as Dust was saying, community is key. Cash or Trade's all about community. We believe in it strong. And we think if you provide that space for, you know, fans to come together, things thrive.
Love that. Our thanks to Brando and Dusty Rich from CashorTrade.org. Thanks to you, Elisa Rockdock, and producer Lauren, to @FunnyGuyTimmy on Fiverr.com for the amazing Gilbert Gottfried read. And thanks to all of you viewers and listeners for checking out Break the Business. Mwah! We love you. We'll see you next week.